Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Laetrile when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it. And there isn't one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know what? Now I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They are the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and the Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD compact disc package. It's educational. It's entertaining. It's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that free package is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Laetrile. It's one of 14 cures to cancer. The 14 are wheatgrass, which was discovered by a lady named Ann Wigmore, or if it wasn't discovered, she's the one that popularized it and made it famous. Juice and raw food diet is also a cure for cancer. The Indian black salve called cansema, with the active ingredient, an herb called bloodroot, ozone, and garlic. The Rene Cassie Essiac formula, an Indian formula out of Canada. The Royal Rife Frequency Machine. Max Gerson's coffee enemas, vitamin and minerals, Joel Wallach, Laetrile, vitamin B17, Easter lily ovum, vitamin and mineral therapy, and then the traditional cut, burn, and poison, and frankincense, or essential oils. 14 in all. Cut, burn, and poison is recognized by the American Medical Association. 37% of the time they're successful. That is, if you catch the cancer in time, while it's small, and you go into the average run-of-the-mill doctor, and those are called allopathic physicians, and he treats you with, it could be radiation, it could be surgery, or with chemotherapy. 37% of the time, it'll kill the cancer and you will survive. And if you survive for 5 years, it's called a cure. I guess if you die in the sixth year, you were cured and you have a new cancer, or and then you died from cancer, but it was after you were cured. It looks like to me, if you die from cancer, boys and girls, that you are a failure. Now, in the Bible, we are guaranteed 70 years of life. And I say guaranteed because there's a contract involved. And the contract offers you 70 years of trouble-free life, 70 years. In fact, there's a little bonus that goes with it. You could get 80 years, 70, if you're strong. Some people live to be 90 or 100. There are some rare cases where people have lived to be 120 years or 122. I think the Guinness record has a French woman died here in the 1990s, as I recall, 122 years old. Those are exceptions to the rule, and oftentimes people will say, well, our bodies are designed to live for 140 years, and if you don't live to be 140 years old, then you're doing something wrong. I saw Jack LaLanne the other day on television. He was about 90-something, and he's one of these health nuts, you know, health fruitcake from California. Not that that's necessarily all bad, but the truth of the matter is the average Joe Sixpack is not going to be a health food fanatic, and he's not going to be a workout fanatic like an Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so the bottom line is the average guy, and I say this, the average, is going to live to be 75 years old. And that's the national average here in the United States. In Japan, it's up to 80. And there are some groups of people around the world, the Hunzas, for instance, you've heard about, and a few isolated groups of people that live high in the mountains and drink glacial milk. That is, they get a lot of minerals out of the glacier water. Live to be 100 in greater numbers than people live to be 100 in industrial society. Now, here in America, the rate of cancer is 50%. That is, one out of every two people in America living today, drawing breath, will come down with cancer at least once in his lifetime. And they tell us that by the year 2020, that is going to increase to 100%. That is, one out of one is going to come down with cancer at some point in his lifetime. Those are pretty awesome statistics. Going back 100 years, it was 1 in 33 in 1900. Something very dramatic has occurred here in America. I would submit probably it has occurred worldwide. Linus Pauling came to the conclusion that disease is caused not by walking down the street with your mouth open and you accidentally sucked in a bacteria or a virus or something, but that it's caused by nutritional deficiency, that there's something missing in your diet, something missing in your body. There's one other factor that comes in. We call them carcinogens, and that's where you breathe something repetitively, like bad air. And we find that in some locations, we have a higher incidence of cancer. For instance, if you're breathing in a lot of tobacco smoke, you're a smoker, you have a higher chance, a higher risk, a higher rate of cancer than you do if you're a non-smoker. And then studies have been done, well, what about if you don't smoke, but you're around people who do, and you breathe in secondhand smoke? Well, you don't get cancer as often as if you smoked, but you get cancer more often than people who do not breathe in secondhand smoke. And so these are called carcinogens, and there are a lot of those. And those can give you cancer, at least a higher rate of cancer. This is the toxic quality. This is the poison. So in order for you to get sick, you have to either, one, be nutritionally deficient, that is starving to death, or you have to be poisoned. Some carcinogen is present. And it could be, of course, that cancer doesn't come into the game. Maybe you're going to come down with Parkinson's disease or muscular dystrophy or multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease or something else. So here in America, infectious diseases like typhus and typhoid and cholera and things that affect people, you know, around the world and kill them, doesn't occur very often. We have a pretty good hygiene regimen here in America. Most people have showers, and they shower regularly or take baths and keep clean. They don't drink polluted water, and as a result of that, our infectious disease rate's pretty low. But our disease rate isn't low. In fact, 99% of us are diseased. 99% of Americans have a disease. There's something wrong with them. They have symptoms. Only 1% are symptom-free. Back in 1917, during World War I, when young men were being brought in for the draft, or from the draft, they would examine these people, and they'd find that 60% of them were healthy with no symptoms, 40% had symptoms, 40% were sick, 40% needed glasses or hearing aids, or they had allergic reactions, or they had allergies, and, you know, there was something wrong with the guy. Now, that's bad. When 40% of people are sick, you know, you take a look, you know, if you had 10 children, and 4 of them were sick, and 6 of them were well, you'd say, well, what's going on here? They'll eat the same stuff. How come 4 of them are sick? We'd start looking for a cause. Well, if you had 10 children and 9 of them were sick and only 1 of them was well, wouldn't that tell you that you've got some kind of a problem? But the problem is even worse than you had imagined. Well, that's the way cancer is here in the United States. We have a problem here with cancer, and we're spending about $26 billion a year on cancer research. That's a bundle of money, $26 billion a year, and that's just to research it. Doesn't have anything to do with curing cancer. Cancer of it by itself, when you go to the doctor, costs on average $100,000 per patient, and there's about 500,000 people a year dying from cancer, which is up pretty significantly. Back in the 1970s, it was 375,000. So over the past 30 years, from 1977 to 2007, it's gone up by 125,000 people more every year die. Now, you people got real excited during the Vietnam War when 58,000 people died in the war over a period of 10 years, about 6,000 a year. I mean, you people were rioting in the streets and parading up and down the streets and demanding that the war end, and you voted a president out and voted Nixon in, and, you know, got real excited. Well, if 500,000 people are dying, 10 times that many, and then they're dying every single year, not over a period of 10 years, but every single year they're dying. Isn't that worse? Shouldn't you be 10 times more incensed? Shouldn't you be 10 times madder, 10 times more excited about cancer than you were about the Vietnam War? It would seem like to me just the number of people dying would get people excited, but it doesn't. It doesn't. And that's because nobody is bringing this to you on the TV screen every night and hammering you with propaganda like they did during the Vietnam War. So it's kind of out of sight and out of mind. I've mentioned this a time or two. The allopathic medical doctors, that's your MDs, you know, Joe Sixpack, the guy you go to every now and again. Well, those guys kill people, and they kill people at the rate of 130,000 per year. That's right. It's called iatrogenic disease. That's where doctors make mistakes or doctors cause the malady that kills you. It's 130,000 a year. Then there's another group of about 100,000 per year that are killed by doctors when they prescribe the wrong drug. Separate from the 130,000 a year that they cut out the wrong lung. But there's another group, 100,000 per year, that they prescribe the wrong drug or too much or not enough of the drug. And these are drug deaths, drug mistakes. And then 90,000 a year are killed from infections in hospitals. 90,000. So it's 130, 190. Now you add those up, you know, it's pretty soon as old Everett Dirksen used to say, you know, when they're spending money in Washington, you say, you know, a billion here and a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now that's 320,000 a year. So if we just knock off 300,000 people a year, over 10 years, that's 3 million people. Now about 2.5 million people a year die here in the United States. Every year, 2.5 million people just kick off and die. And 500,000 of those people die from cancer. I mean, that's just kind of special. Another 750,000 die, and that's 50% more, die from heart attack and stroke. Now, heart attack and stroke and cancer are totally preventable. You shouldn't die from cancer, heart attack, or stroke. You should die of old age. You should die of natural causes. And when I was a kid, people used to die from natural causes. Not anymore. Everybody has a cause of death, and we autopsy everybody. And we find out, oh, my God, this guy died from cancer. Oh, my God, this guy died in an auto wreck. This guy died from a coronary. This guy died from a stroke. This guy died from Lou Gehrig's disease or whatever it is. So we hang a label on here, and we describe the symptoms that you have so that when you die, we can put the symptoms on the death certificate over there and say, well, this guy died from Lou Gehrig's disease. I don't know if that makes us feel better or not, but, you know, you're just as dead. Now, on average, you should live to be 70 years old. So if you don't live to be 70, then you didn't collect the benefits that you were guaranteed in Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. See, you're entitled to these benefits. There's 33 of these benefits that come from practicing the Ten Commandments and the Old Covenant law. And so God said, well, you're going to die. There's no two ways about that. You're going to die. But my great-granddad, his name was Abe Snyder. He died in 1947. He went to bed at about 10 or 10:30. And he normally got up about 7 in the morning, and he didn't get up, so about 8 or 8:30 they went up and they opened his door, and there was old Abe. He'd died in his sleep of natural causes. He went to bed one night. He didn't wake up the next morning. And then sometimes in the paper they'd say he died peacefully in his sleep. Now, there's something to be said about dying peacefully in your sleep as opposed to dying from AIDS dementia or from cancer. I had a sister-in-law that died from cancer. God, that was a bad way to go. For about 18 months, or 16 months, I guess. She died in 16 months. And then she was in great pain. I mean, finally, toward the end there, they had to keep her sedated the whole time, and she just zonked out because she was in great pain from the cancer. And I looked at her, and I watched her die over a long period of time. And I came to the conclusion, if there's any way in the world that I can avoid that, I want to do that. So that's the introduction. That's cancer. And I wanted to let you know that there's 14 cures to cancer, because every day, almost every day, not necessarily every day, but at least once a week, there'll be some news article here on our local news that there's some march on some place, or there's some kind of a thon. You know, they're running a thon, or they're doing a thon, T-H-O-N. I'm not quite sure how many of these thons there are, but there's lots of them. And then there's the stories, the tragic stories of little Timmy over here who needs a transplant because he's got cancer. He needs a bone marrow transplant. He needs a liver transplant. He needs this or that or something else, and which costs $200,000, $300,000. And so they're collecting money for him, or they're running or marching, or they're doing this or that or something else to find a cure to cancer. And I don't join any of those groups or organizations. I don't donate to the American Cancer Society, and I don't donate, you know, to these various and sundry groups over here. And I know people think, well, my God, that guy Gordon is so callous to the suffering of humanity. And I thought about that, and I thought, gee, am I really callous? I've told you a couple of times that I don't give money to people that hold up signs and said, we'll work, you know, for food. See, I've actually tested them. I'm going to challenge you. Next time you see a guy holding a sign up that says, we'll work for food, stop and say, jump in. I'll put you to work, and I'll feed you. And see if the guy will actually go with you and work for food? Because I've asked two or three of those guys with signs, you know, that says, well, work for food. And the two or three guys that I asked wouldn't do it. And I used to give quarters to guys, you know, bums on the street, you know, and they'd say, hey, you got a quarter for a cup of coffee? Hey, you got a quarter for this? I said, no, but I got a job over here. And I couldn't find anybody that wanted to work. Now, I've always worked and produced. I've never been hungry. I'm not one of those. And I never held up a sign that I'll work for food. Not to say that I never will, but, you know, if there's hunger out there, I think if you went to work and produce something, I think you could alleviate a lot of that hunger. So I just thought I'd throw that one out there for your consideration. So I quit giving money to bums because they're lazy, and I quit giving, you know, I quit talking to people with signs that say, hey, I'll work for food, because I haven't found anybody that would. And I don't give money to the cancers over here, cancer research, because they're already spending $28 billion a year. And they've been doing this for a lot of years. They haven't found a cure to cancer yet. So I figured if they haven't found it over the last 30 years, they're not very likely to find it over the next 30 years, because there's already 14 cures to cancer that I know of, and I'm just a crummy plumber. I mean, hell, there could be 28 cures, and I don't know about the other 14. But I do know of these 14, and so I'm asking the question, well, what if you could find a cure to cancer? I mean, what if we spent $100 billion or $50 trillion and we found a cure to cancer? We'd have 15 cures, wouldn't we? If we're not using the 14 that we already know about, what in the hell do we need a 15th one for? So I'm just looking at it pragmatically. From my common sense says, if you got 14 cures to cancer, why do you need to spend a lot of money trying to find a 15th? And there could be a 15th, 16th, or 17th cure. A lot of people have went to work on this project over here. Most of them are medical doctors. Most of them. Now, Ann Wigmore and wheatgrass over here was probably discovered by a quack. I don't think that Ann Wigmore was a doctor. I think she's just a quack, as the medical profession would call them. But Essiac was discovered by Renee Cassie. She was a registered nurse. And she took the finding directly to the medical establishment, and they rejected it in Canada. Absolutely rejected it. Didn't want it. Easter lily oven came out of the medical profession in Oklahoma. It's been banned. It's banned by the medical profession. Latril, vitamin B17, was discovered in 1950 by a medical doctor. The great discoveries that are made are typically made by doctors and then suppressed by the medical establishment because it doesn't meet the protocols that they want it to meet. That is, it doesn't make enough money. It's like the story of chelation, intravenous chelation, was discovered back in the 1960s. So when you have atherosclerosis, that is, when you have plugged up arteries, that is, your cholesterol is out of balance, and then it leaves this plaque, you know, in your arteries, and it causes blood clots, and then pretty soon it causes heart attack, and you have to have a rooter, they call it, there in the side alleys or the back alleys, but it's where you have your veins cleaned out surgically. Now, that costs about $100,000. Chelation only costs you about $1,000 or $1,500. I went through it some years back. I think it was, it was less than $1,000. And it'll clean your arteries out. It was discovered by the medical profession, but they really frown on it. They really don't like it, and they don't use it. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Would you rather make $100,000 working on a guy with bypass surgery, or would you rather make $1,000 and clean his arteries out with chelation? I mean, you know, 100,000 versus 1,000. Well, right away, you know, if both of them do the same job. And by the way, the chelation not only works better; it's more, it's a better processor program. It doesn't leave any long-term side effects. You know, like, you know, when you get your the veins taken out of your legs and stuck up there into your heart valves and things like that. That, you know, about 5 years later, you need a second one. And then about the second or third time you have bypass surgery, you die from it. I mean, that's just the way life is. So that's the background on cancer. Now, there's a cure for cancer called Laetrile. That's just one of 14. And I got a book the other day from the Brave New Bookstore people called Laetrile Case Histories, The Richardson Cancer Clinic Experience. And I thought I'd share it with you. It's a dynamite book. Now, you know, the typical average run-of-the-mill guy, when he's got cancer or something's wrong, we have a neighbor lady over here, the illustration here. Her name's Kathleen, and a nice lady. I mean, you know, she's just a wonderful lady, and she's active. She's dead now, but she was very active in local community affairs. You know, like our Hootin' and Hollerin' program here. You know, every year they have a Hootin' and Hollerin' there in Gainesville, and she was very prominent in that every year. And she has a neighbor, lived right across the road from us over here. And she got cancer, and she went to the medical doctors, and it took about, I don't know, a couple of years, maybe three. I forget, it was a long time. And she had bone marrow transplants, and my God, they had insurance. They had insurance. Her husband worked down here in a medical lab in Mountain Home, and they had good health insurance. And so she went, and finally, there wasn't much more they could do, and she just died. Now, I never did run over and say to her, now, Kathy, there's 14 cancer cures here. See, my wife has had cancer since 1978. So she's been living with cancer. In fact, she does the Gerson and the coffee enema regime, and she's on vitamins and minerals. And she's been managing her cancer now for 30 years. 2008 will be the 30th year, or maybe 2007 completed the 30th. And she's in pretty good health. I mean, not the best, you know, but she's in pretty good health, all things being considered. And Kathy over here knew that my wife had cancer. Never once did she call her on the phone and say, "Now, Mrs. Gordon, I know that you have cancer or you had cancer, and I would like you to tell me what did you do." She never called once. And we're the kind of people, we don't run around knocking on people's doors, you know, trying to get them converted to Jehovah's Witness theology. You know, we're not out here trying to get you to jump on the bandwagon and vote for Ron Paul or somebody else. I'm not out here beating the gong. We try to live our lives, you know, privately and mind our own business. Now, if somebody were to ask me, you know, say, "Hey, who do you think is a better presidential candidate?" I'd tell him what I thought. If he said to me, "Well, what do you think of cancer over here?" I'd say, "Well, here's what I think." I mean, if you ask, I'll tell, but if you don't ask me, I'm not going to tell you what you don't want to hear. And so I watched this lady die over a period of 2 or 3 years, knowing full well that what her problem was. I know what causes cancer, and I know how to cure it. Now, the medical profession, they tell you plainly, we don't know what causes it, and we don't know how to cure it, but we do have a treatment for it. 37% of the time, they can cut it out, they can burn it out, or they can poison it out, and that's true. We don't deny that. But 63% of the time, like Kathy over here died. So 63% of their patients die. So what do we do about that 63%? So if you have cancer, or maybe you even have terminal cancer, it's curable. My wife had terminal cancer. They said, "You're going to die in 3 to 6 months." Which is where chapter 1 starts. It says, "You are going to die." Well, let me tell you about you're going to die when you get cancer when we come back. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, just call us at the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use here on the Law Hour are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, Laetrile. We're going to zero in on Laetrile over here. It's kind of a neat vitamin. It's called vitamin B17. It was discovered back in 1950 by a fellow named Krebs in San Francisco, California. At the time they found vitamin B17, they didn't know what it did, what it was for, how it worked, or why. You know, it's kind of like discovering vitamin B6, you know, when they first discovered it. They said, "Wow, look at this. We got a product here. It's called a vitamin. We don't know what it does or what it's for, how it works, or why, but there it is. And so let's investigate it." And that's what Krebs did. And a fellow by the name of Richardson, Dr. John A. Richardson, M.D. So this guy is a medical doctor. He's not a plumber offering you, you know, legal advice, or a plumber offering you medical advice or something like that. And that's why I kind of like to be cautious and circumspect. You know, I'm a plumber by trade, and so I hate to come around here and say to people, you know, "Well, I got a cure to cancer," because, you know, that could get me branded as a quack. You know, who in the hell does this plumber think he is? But I'm not brain dead, and I can read a book, and here's a book written by a medical doctor, and this medical doctor, he was treating people with this Laetrile and curing their cancers. Well, he said he didn't cure anything. He just put in a vitamin that they were deficient in, and the cancer went away. Well, it occurred to me that maybe if you took this B17 vitamin instead of the cancer going away, maybe the cancer wouldn't come in the first place. You ever stop and think about that? Now, laetrile is fairly simple and straightforward. It comes out of the seeds of various plants. So when you're eating grapes, and if the grapes have seeds and you eat those seeds, you're eating laetrile because it's in those seeds. Now, there's a couple of sources that you can get this laetrile from that are pretty high, pretty heavy. If you take peach or apricot pits and then you break them open, sometimes when you buy peaches, the pit will be split and you open it up and inside there's a kernel. That kernel, that peach or that apricot pit kernel, is just loaded with this vitamin B17. And so, you know, you don't have to go to Mexico. You don't have to break any laws or get real physical. You know, you can just go to the grocery store and buy some peaches and bring them home, break them open. And now those kernels are really bitter, really bitter. I mean, they're not something you want to put cream and sugar on, you know. And I just swallow them whole, and just stick them in your mouth and swallow them like you would a pill, you know. Well, anyway, here in chapter one, Dr. Richardson starts off. He says, Mrs. Evans was almost hysterical when she burst through the door of our clinic. And she said, look what they did. Look what they did to my car. Just look. And two of the men patients followed her back to her car, which was parked in front of our clinic, and duly reported the damage. While Mrs. Evans had been receiving her injection of laetrile, someone had permanently scratched on her windshield in large letters, "You are going to die." When I heard of the incident, I was dismayed, but not surprised, because for over a month, a woman had stationed herself conspicuously across the street, and she had written down the license number of every car that had come to our clinic. Some patients never returned because of it, perhaps feeling that they were going to get into some kind of trouble with the authorities. And when the woman was asked why she was recording the license numbers, her reply was candid. She was doing it, she said, for the government, and added for emphasis that she was looking forward to the day when all quack clinics like this one will be closed down. So a month or so later, when the license taking was replaced by photograph taking, it became clear to us that the state was attempting to frighten away our patients, that what it had failed to accomplish through the courts, it was now trying to bring about indirectly through intimidation. But that's jumping into the middle of the story. Now, to understand why and how I came to the FDA's public, or to be the FDA's public health enemy number one, let's go back to 1971 when it all began. For over 20 years, I had enjoyed a comfortable and satisfying practice in Berkeley, California. And although my specialty was ear, nose, and throat, I considered myself a family-oriented general practitioner. And as such, I treated a wide variety of illnesses, including the initial stages of cancer, although the latter on a very limited basis. Over the course of years, I have prescribed all of my currently accepted modalities of cancer treatment, surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, and usually by referring them to specialists in these fields. These therapies seldom prolonged the lives of my patients and, in fact, often seemed to shorten their lives. They hardly seemed worth the cost to the patient, either in terms of financial outlay or in suffering from the painful side effects of radiation burns and drug toxicity. But yet I took some comfort in the knowledge that what I was prescribing was a treatment of choice within the medical profession, and that none of my colleagues were obtaining any better results, so I simply did the best I could with what was available, or so I thought at the time. Then one evening in a local restaurant after dinner with Ralph Bowman, the man who is now my clinic manager and medical assistant, the conversation turned to a substance called laetrile. Ralph had come across some literature on the subject of laetrile and began to describe its theoretical action against cancer. I was fascinated immediately at the logic of finding a control for cancer in nature and decided to investigate further. Fortunately, the developers of laetrile lived right across the bay in San Francisco. Ernest T. Krebs, Sr., M.D., had been working with this substance since 1923. His sons, Ernest T. Krebs, Jr., Ph.D., and Byron Krebs, M.D., later joined in their father's research and perfected laetrile in 1952. I looked up their names in the central telephone directory and dialed the number, and I was pleasantly surprised when an amicable Ernest T. Krebs, Jr. answered and was more than willing to discuss the matter with me at great length. During the weeks that followed, I had just about everything I could find on the subject and read everything I could find and spent many hours at the office of Dr. Krebs discussing the theoretical model as well as the practical application of the substance called laetrile. It was as though I had returned to medical school, for I found myself boning up on long-forgotten facts in the field of embryology and biochemistry. The more I learned, the more convinced I became that Dr. Krebs really had the answer. Basically, the Krebs theory advanced is that cancer is not caused by some strange invading force from outside of our bodies, but rather by malfunctions of normal mechanisms solely within our bodies all by itself. Those malfunctions are the result of a deficiency in a chemical substance found in certain foods and of a deficiency in certain enzymes produced in the pancreas. The natural chemical food factor is known as nitrilicide or vitamin B17, and the pancreatic enzymes are known as trypsins, T-R-Y-P-S-I-N-S. Vitamin B17 is a cyanide-containing compound, as is vitamin B12.
that gives up its cyanide only in the presence of an enzyme group called the beta glucosidase. But the miracle of nature is that this enzyme group is found to any appreciable extent only in cancer tissue. Now, when it is found elsewhere, it always is accompanied by greater quantities of another enzyme called rhodanase, which has the capacity to convert the cyanide immediately into completely harmless substances. In fact, some of those byproducts actually are beneficial to man, and they play a role in the formation and utilization of other vitamins. Cancer tissue does not have this protecting enzyme. Thus, cancer cells are faced with a double threat. The presence of one enzyme causes them to be exposed to cyanide, while the other enzyme, which is found in all of the cells, results in the failure to detoxify. Now, the net result of this fact of nature is that cancer cells, because of their enzyme composition, are unable to withstand the cyanide from within the vitamin B17 and are therefore destroyed. Normal, non-cancer cells are not threatened by the cyanide and, in fact, are capable of converting the cyanide into nutritional substances that are vital to our health. But nature's mechanism will not work if one fails to eat the foods that contain this necessary vitamin, which is exactly what has happened in modern man, whose food supply has become further and further removed from the natural state. The enzyme factor is equally important, and it is probable that it and the food factor were intended to work together. Basically, what happens is this. The enzyme trypsinogen is converted to trypsin in the intestine, and there, along with chymotrypsin, is utilized in the digestion of animal protein. The surplus is absorbed into the bloodstream and serves to digest or dissolve the protein coating that protects the cancer cell from the attack of the body's white blood cells. Once this is done, the white cells move in on the cancer cells and destroy them just as if they were foreign invaders to the body. But once again, if the pancreas is weak, or if it is exhausted by metabolizing too much sugar, or if the diet contains too much animal protein, then the enzyme is deficient for the job that nature has cut out for it. This is why, in our view, cancer probably should be identified as a deficiency disease. It's a disease caused by a deficiency of vitamin B17, pancreatic enzymes, or both. Now, the foregoing is not intended as a comprehensive explanation of Dr. Krebs' theory, and much has been omitted or oversimplified for this introduction to the subject. To cover the ground adequately would take several volumes and obviously is beyond the scope of a book like this, so I urge every reader interested in the scientific aspect of the lead trail mechanism, however, to read World Without Cancer, The Story of Vitamin B17 by G. Edward Griffin. Pause here. Griffin is the guy that wrote the Federal Reserve book. It's called something about Jekyll Island. It's a masterpiece of research and clarity and should be in the library of every serious student of this subject. Now, as mentioned previously, I soon became convinced on the basis of theory that the nitrilicides consisting of amygdalin, laetrile, and prunasin, together with the pancreatic enzyme trypsin, constituted a natural barrier against the growth of cancer. Now, the next logical step was to confirm the theory through actual practice. So at the time, I was only vaguely aware of the so-called California anti-quackery law. I knew that somehow worthless cures were prohibited by statutes, but I never dreamed how much latitude was allowed administrative public servants to define what was and what was not worthless. And never in my wildest imagination did I suspect that a multi-billion dollar drug industry had such influence over regulatory agencies of government as to constitute a virtual blockade against the development of drugless medicine. At any rate, I was certain that none of these laws affected me. I had been licensed under Section 2146 of the California Business and Professional Code, which reads as follows. Nothing in this chapter, it says, shall be construed so as to discriminate against any particular school of medicine or surgery, school of podiatry, or any other treatment, nor shall it regulate, prohibit, or apply to any kind of treatment by prayer or interfere in any way with the practice of religion. Now, this statute obviously authorized me to use any method of treatment, regardless of the school of medicine thought behind it. Besides, there are well-established procedures for matters of this kind. If the state or a medical society learns of a practice that it considers to be illegal or unethical, it gathers information, contacts the physician in writing or in person, advising him that his actions are in question, and invites him to discuss the matter and to explain or defend his position. Then, if it's decided by the authorities that the practice in question is improper, the physician is advised again in writing and given a choice of conforming to the decision or appealing to a higher authority. It is the way things are done in the profession of honorable men. So I had little reason to suspect that what was in store for me when I ordered my first small supply of Laetrile. And the first patient to receive amygdalin was Mildred Sable, the sister of Charlotte Anderson, who was one of my nurses. She had advanced malignant melanoma of the left arm. Her physician had told her that, in his opinion, she had about 6 weeks to live. On the outside chance that they could slow down the process a little, he had recommended immediate amputation of the arm. Now, amygdalin was administered, and almost immediately the lesions began to heal. Within 2 months, her arm had returned to normal appearance and function, and we put her on a maintenance oral dosage. That was the summer of 1971, and the woman is alive and well today, except for the fact that when she reduces her maintenance dosage of amygdalin, hairs begin to form on the old side of her arm, and it begins to swell. These symptoms retreat, however, with the return to the recommended level of vitamin B17. Now, incidentally, this woman, who also is a diabetic, received an unexpected bonus from our therapy. When she adopted the recommended vegetarian diet, she found that she could discontinue the use of insulin and still control her diabetes. I might point out here that, did you catch this little section in here that said that animal protein is involved? Your body takes 75% of its energy to digest animal protein. With that much of your body's energy devoted to digestion, it doesn't have but 25% left to heal your body of any disease. So one of the recommendations when you have cancer is that you get off of animal protein and go to vegetable protein, nuts, for instance, which don't take as much energy to digest. I thought I'd throw that out. My wife's had cancer for many years. And notice here that when she drops off on the B17, the cancer comes back. That's the bad news. And we've observed the same thing over the last 30 years. And then that is, once you get cancer, you're now predisposed to. So any deviation from your diet or from your vitamin intake reintroduces the cancer, or the cancer comes back. So it appears that once you get cancer, you're always going to have it, and you're always going to be dogged by it. So if you want to get past the cancer problem, then the logical thing is, don't get it in the first place. Don't allow your body to become so weakened that it develops cancer to start with. And so this B17 is a pretty good way to do that. Now, a good way to get it, remember, it comes from nuts and seeds. Another good way to get B17 is through sprouts. So you're eating sprouts, you're getting B17. If you need massive doses of B17, then you crack open the peach pits and apricot pits and eat the seeds out of the grapes. The practical application is, see, they've developed these seedless grapes. And then they taste real good. They got a lot of sugar in them. God, we just love them. And most people don't like seeds. Now, nuts, you know, are pretty good. Those are seeds, you know, nuts. You know, when you're eating seeds, it could be walnuts or cashews or whatever nut you're eating. These nuts, you know, they taste pretty good, and they have B17 in them. So there's a problem, though. When you eat cooked nuts, you know, you buy these Planters peanuts. I don't know if peanuts now have, or all nuts have B17 in them, but a lot of nuts do. When you cook it, you know, the nuts that you buy in the store, the Planters nuts and so on, they're all cooked. Well, when you cook it, it kills the enzyme. See, this enzyme works in conjunction with the latrum. So this is why many doctors call cancer the cooked food disease. And one of the cures to cancer is a vegetarian diet. And that's where you don't cook the food. Now, vegetarians cook their vegetables. But a raw food diet. Now, one of the cures that came out of this is a lady down in San Diego, California, did this back in the 1970s. She went on an all raw food diet, and in 6 months cured her cancer. All raw foods. So tuck that one away in your heart. It's one of the cancer cures. Now, remember, there's 14 of them, and I went through all 14. Let me do it once more for you. The Ann Wigmore wheatgrass. Now, remember, this wheatgrass over here has high concentrations of B17. Juice and raw food diet. That's the one I just told you about. Now, this juice over here is good because this is like carrot juice, you know. To get a glass of carrot juice, if I recall, a quart of carrot juice takes 5 pounds of carrots, I believe. And you see, you can drink a quart of carrot juice a day, but you can't eat 5 pounds of carrots a day. So the moral of the story is, if you get on and get a juicer and you start drinking these juices, so you can get massive quantities of vitamins and minerals out of the juice. And then the Indian black salve, that's used, it's bloodroot is what it is. Now, bloodroot is the active ingredient that kills cancer. Now, I don't know what's in bloodroot. My guess is it's probably this B17 problem, because the cyanide is what kills the cancer. Now, I know you're sitting there saying, well, cyanide's a deadly poison. Well, there's lots of foods that are poison. You know, if you take too much of it, it'll kill you. But there's not enough cyanide in that B17 to kill you, not in a peach pit. You know, you're not going to be able to eat enough. Now, the cyanide is enough to kill cancer cells. So when God designed this process over here, he's got an enzyme working with the B17, which is laced with cyanide. And if you remember the description here, see, your normal cells, the cells that haven't gone haywire on you, they can tolerate that cyanide because the cyanide mixed with the enzyme becomes a harmless food. But the malignant cell can't handle the cyanide, and the cyanide kills the cell. Malignant cells. So bottom line, we all have cancer all the time. You got cancer cells. You got cells in your body. You know, there's a trillion or 2 trillion cells running around your body. And some of those cells get malignant from time to time. So the white corpuscles go out there and they kill them and dispose of them. Now that's your immune system. It just works like a shot. Now the ozone, garlic, and the essiac are all foods that you eat that garlic, it kills cancer. There's a, I don't know if it's B17 or other chemicals that are in garlic. Ozone will do the same thing. Now, the Royal Rife frequency machine, now that was developed by a medical doctor also. I'm pretty sure that Royal Rife was a medical doctor. Now, that's a technological advance. The coffee enemas by Max Gerson, that stimulates your liver. And vitamin and minerals, that's Joel Wallach again, which includes this vitamin B17, by the way. Vitamins and minerals, there's 92 of them, and Wallach puts out a program for them. Then this Laetrile that we're talking about. Now, Easter Lily Ovum. Is a high concentration of something, some kind of a nutrient. I don't know what's in the Easter Lily ovum, but when it's injected, it kills cancer like a shot. Vitamin and mineral therapy, that's where you specialize on certain vitamins and take massive doses of them. And then there's cut, burn, and poison. That's the traditional one. And then frankincense or essential oils. So tuck it away in your heart. We have 14 cures to cancer, of which Laetrile is one of them, which is what we are reviewing right now, Laetrile. So next time you're tempted to march on cancer, remember you've already got 14 cures. What are you going to do with the 15th? Hey, we're running out of time. I got to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.